Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we examine the push to shield businesses, churches, hospitals, and other organizations from virtually all liability over COVID-19. Now, backers maintain such a measure is an essential element of the state's post-pandemic recovery, but critics insist it's a misguided example of legislative overreach, the equivalent of amputating the arm of a patient who's suffered a paper cut. For a healthy dose of debate, it's Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house. And joining me to talk about what has to be one of the General Assembly's timeliest issues, are Republican Senator Mark Mesmer of Jasper, the Senate's majority leader and the author of Senate Bill 1, an immunity measure backed by much of the state's business sector. Democratic Senator David Nizgotsky of South Bend, a small business owner and a longtime champion of worker rights. Barbara Quant, state director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. And Indianapolis attorney Kathy Farinas, a representative of the Indiana Trial Lawyers Association. And I thank you all for being here to talk about not only timely, but this one is one of those that seems to be a priority for a lot of people and is getting a lot of attention early on, and actually is one of the few bills that's already been heard by committee, Judiciary Committee this week, and received a due pass recommendation. And it is, of course, bearing Senate Bill 1, which I don't need to tell you. Usually that's a designation reserved for something that Senate leadership or the majority of the chamber says is a priority. So you are the majority leader. You do have Senate Bill 1. Mm-hmm. We'll stipulate you it's and your caucus priority. Think it's important.
Yes.
Why do you think it's important?
Well, as we toured the state and really from the start of the pandemic with the meetings we had with the governor, one of the early concerns that people that were in essential businesses that really needed to stay open during the pandemic, one of the main concerns we kept hearing across the state was, can the governor by executive order give some liability protection to those folks at the onset of the COVID-19 crisis? And working with their legal staff, by mid-June, they said they didn't feel like they had the statutory authority to do that, so we would need to correct that via legislation either at the federal or the state level. And that same echo came from nonprofit groups, from K through 12 education, a big concern, from higher education, big concern. It was not just businesses only. It was all population segments, of volunteer groups, of education, of business. It really affects everybody. Now the most likely to get sued would be businesses. Small businesses would be pummeled, by just trying to defend a lawsuit. Large businesses could probably afford it, but then the cost of settling COVID lawsuits would still be expensive. And whether you're a small business, a nonprofit group, in any of those situations, just the cost of trying to defend a lawsuit would be enough to put most of them out of business.
And just to be clear, so your phone, figuratively speaking, was ringing from people of various organizations wanting this,
right?
And at the same time, nobody, as far as you know, has actually filed litigation
in Indiana. Nobody's been sued yet. I think that was confirmed in testimony last week, but it doesn't mean it won't happen. Just the prospect of having that hanging over a cloud, looming over, the society as a whole, will really be prohibitive in having us ever be able to get back to what we all want normal. We don't want a new normal. We all want society at some point to go back to normal.
So at this point, more of a preventive measure, you might say, even though it is, at least as it was initially authored, it was retroactive to March.
It's retroactive to March 1st.
Past year,
yeah,
which is, I think, 10 days before it was declared a pandemic by the World Health Organization.
Yes. So,
David Nizgotsky, now you've got little people on both shoulders talking in your ear. You're a small business owner, so you're probably saying, hooray.
Absolutely.
But you've been a longtime champion of organized labor, mm-hmm. And in fact, the only entity I believe that testified in opposition to the bill in committee was the Secretary Treasurer of the state AFL-CIO, mm-hmm. an organization with which you've had a longtime alliance. So,
absolutely.
Which little voice is going to win out? The whispering in your ear.
Well, actually, you put that very well, John, because I am doing my very best with this to try to find a middle path. To where we have to realize that this is the first time in our lives that we've ever experienced anything of this nature. I've always been a very strong advocate for working people, for our essential employees, but I, as a small business owner, recognize that there are thousands of other small businesses out there, and some of them have not survived. Some of them are wondering how they're going to survive. And actually, I mean, we are actually, I'm an employee of my business, so I'm also one of these essential employees.
Those performance reviews are glowing, I hear, by the way, for you, just incidentally.
But in reality, we're not trying to find ways to where we're trying to give a pass to bad actors. So I understand this. That's not the case. Those that are blatantly doing that are going against what the CDC recommends or your state or local health departments, those ones should be held responsible. But there are so many out there trying to do the right thing, and they don't know what the next step is going to take or where the next step could turn into a cliff for them. So I think this gives them some type of peace and resolve that gives them the opportunity to go forward. So
Does this mean that when I look at the tote board or the tally board, when votes are finally cast, yours will be with a yay?
Well, this is still in the beginning process. It's been amended. I understand that. And, maybe there's still a little bit more help that this bill can get along the way. But for right now, I want to try to be supportive of this, but also keeping in mind that we are protecting workers' rights. So we have, I think we can accomplish both with this.
As long as you were under the bright interrogation lights, I had to try to pin you down one way or the other.
So
we'll circle back and see if we can.
Okay.
Barbara Quant, your organization was one of, I think, 20 or so that did offer formal testimony or came forth with a position, at least during the Judiciary Committee hearing. And it's a lot of the people you would expect, the chamber and certainly manufacturers and independent businesses. Why so important to you? The variation of the question I asked Senator Messman.
I think both senators have articulated the issue very well. I mean, it's no secret that small businesses have suffered tremendously during this pandemic. And I don't think we're going to see the fallout for some time. When we asked our members and small business owners what their outlook was, one in four said that they would not last 6 months if situation did not change dramatically.
And that, when you say a situation, does that mean that they need, you know, payroll support, subsidies from the feds,
or
are they saying that change means
help.
this bill specifically?
They are, and that number has increased over the last few months because they're worried. They're doing everything they can to stay open, trying to follow all the guidance, which of course changes, and the rules, which sometimes depend on the municipality that they're located in. So they have really suffered. I mean, restaurants and bars, my goodness. So we don't know. It'll be probably months or years before we know the total economic fallout. When I say one in four, I think it could be far worse than that, because small business owners hang in there until the very last. The last thing they ever want to do is lay anyone off or close down. So it will be some time before we know the true picture here. But any kind of guidance, that help we can give them that says, you know, if you do everything, if you try and you're not ignoring the rules, you should be able to be protected from a frivolous lawsuit.
Well, let's see if there's a contrarian in the room, maybe. And I should preface this by saying, Kathy, your organization is technically neutral on the bill. But you were in committee, and you did have some concerns. Share some of those with us.
And I think we still remain in that position. We thank Senator Messmer for hearing some of our concerns and reacting accordingly. We still have some concerns. I think one of the things that, as trial lawyers, when we see a bill with such broad sweeping immunity, it raises concern. While we are absolutely, and many of us are, small business owners ourselves, with law firms and things of that nature, we still believe that there are protections that people deserve as well, not just small businesses, workers, patrons. Those types of people also deserve protection. And so the balance here is to try and provide small businesses with the protections that they feel they need at this time, but in a manner that does so that promotes good public policy. And by that, I mean one of the things I think the bill could still use some tweaking on is awarding these immunities to people who are following the protocols, following the CDC guidelines, the state mandates. One of the things you don't want this bill to do is water down the effectiveness of the mandates. And right now, as presently worded, and we're still in the process, right? It's still going to go through seconds and thirds on the floor. But one of the things that is giving us a little bit of concern is that whether you're a bad actor or somebody who has gone overboard trying to comply, you're getting the same immunity unless your actions are so egregious that it rises to the level of gross negligence. If you look at case law, that's very hard to do. The courts are just not finding people committing gross negligent acts very often. And just merely not complying with something, we fear is not going to go to the level that would be required to actually be able to pursue somebody like that. So we want to be sure that the bill is balanced in a way that gives the protections to those who deserve it, the small businesses who have gone overboard to meet the mandates and to give their workers the protection that they deserve during this pandemic, but doesn't award that immunity to bad actors.
Well, let's dig into that, because it's, as I understand the bill is written, it's not only acts that people commit, if you want to call it that, but all omission. I feel like I'm in church, acts of commission, omission. But and so the concern that's been articulated is an omission, for instance, is if a business said, don't wear, follow the mask guideline, that you're thinking could be covered by this immunity, right? If a business said, tells its employees, you know, I don't like the look, it makes our customers, you know, unhappy, so forget them.
I think the bill lacks some requirements that a business to receive the immunity act in a reasonable manner. And that's where I also think there's a little bit of a gap here where we're treating everybody the same. We're treating a mom and pop Ace Hardware type situation where I go in to buy a shovel. They have a duty to me and they're going to receive immunity. But people are falling under the definitions like a nursing home. Those are our most vulnerable people. I would contend that somebody who places a family member in a nursing home is going to hold that nursing home to a higher standard to protect that individual than me going in to buy a shovel in a hardware store.
And that's an example I think that's been cited. There, Northern Indiana, there was a nursing home where a family was trying to find somebody who was recovering, I believe, from surgery. As I understand it, the nursing home was asked, do you have any cases? They may apparently misrepresented the situation, said no, there were cases, and you can...
And I do think the bill has been adjusted to account for that type of a situation. Let me give an example of one that maybe still falls in that unclear area in the bill would be a nursing home is failing to adequately test the people who are coming in, their residents. And typically there's two residents in a room in most nursing homes. That person who's not properly tested is placed in a room with someone who doesn't have COVID. And then the person who wasn't ill prior becomes ill and passes. I don't think that any court is going to consider that gross negligence. That's just straight up negligence.
Let's get the other side. Nursing homes are a good one to talk about because we've had upwards of 8,000 deaths in Indiana, sadly, and I think half of them have been in long-term care facilities. Now, no one's suggesting it's because of misconduct by the long-term care facilities. That's an at-risk group, but that is where a lot of Hoosiers are perishing. Is that a legitimate concern?
It would be
Senator?
A legitimate concern, and we're more than willing to discuss it, how to refine those definitions. But I think the level of expectation in the medical care facility for gross negligence would be a clearly different standard than you at your office or you at a retail store. I mean, the standard of care expectation in a medical facility is higher, and I mean, ultimately, all of these things, and we can, I mean, absolutely willing to look at, you know, how to refine the, you know, the definitions and the expectations, but what a retail store, what a hardware store, what a hospital, what a nursing home, you know, what their level of standard of care that's expected and would probably have to meet a higher expectation in court, is a reasonable issue to try to...
For some suggestion, for instance, instead of gross negligence and willful or wanton disregard, it might just be simple negligence. And I'm no attorney. I'm not going to pretend I understand the difference between gross and negligence and negligence, although I know it when I see it, to quote a former Chief Justice.
I don't think those terms are defined in code, but it's by court precedent. And you know, negligence, gross negligence. I mean, those are all things that we'll continue to nuance on that bill.
One other thing, let's explain what entities are affected. We say we've all been using the term small businesses, maybe hospitals, healthcare facilities, retailers, but it's 11. The definition of person, which is how it's worded, it's 11. It could be a person. Could be a nonprofit organization. Could be, I guess, somebody's little league if you sponsor some activity. It really is virtually anything living, breathing. It's animal, mineral, vegetable. If we're playing 20 questions, it's...
We cover everybody. And one of the questions was, is the definition too broad? No, the definition is intended to be broad. Because if you're a nonprofit, if you're a volunteer group, if you're a civic organization, if you're a religious institution, tell me which group you want to exclude would be a lot easier than trying to itemize each group we include. So we made the definition broad to cover every person in any scenario, because you know they all have the same concern. I mean, how many civic organizations canceled community events across the state this year? You know, they could have been a completely outdoor event where transmission rates have really proven to be almost impossible, but they canceled out of fear of their organization being sued and being ruined. So it affects everybody. The concern is for everybody in every scenario, and the definition is broad because of that. But I do want to address a comment that Senator Noskowski pointed out, and concern about protecting worker rights. We have intentionally made sure we don't infringe on any kind of occupational safety, you know, health rules. No unemployment rules.
You can still get workers' comp. Prescribed course you're suggesting.
Absolutely. So all of those things are left unprotected, untouched by this bill, so we don't infringe on safety rules at work, on any type of benefits that an employee might be allowed to if they get sick from COVID, if they get fired because they got COVID. We're leaving all of those things untouched by this bill and unprotected by this bill, because I'm equally as concerned that we protect, you know, the employees of these businesses. But an employer getting put out of business hurts his employees as much by them losing their job. So this bill protects not only the worker's safety rights, it protects the ability for a customer unfoundedly suing an employer and then putting dozens or hundreds of people out of work who then don't have any ability to provide for their families. So it's a dual look at how do you protect that worker.
Is this one of the areas that you want to see? You mentioned the word tweaking.
Absolutely. And what I appreciate, Mark, is that your willingness that you will continue to look at this. Because, I mean, I look at this whole situation like this. No one here in America or in Indiana asked for this virus to visit them. But this virus has complete disregard for any of our feelings. So having said that, I mean, we have to do everything we can to not try to get muddled up in the middle of all this. We have to try to do something that's going to move forward. I think there are a few people out there seeking to want to capitalize on something like this, but you have businesses that don't know if they're going to continue to exist. You have people that can't pay their rent or their mortgage, and they're in such a hard way, difficult times. It shouldn't be a means to where someone says, this is the only thing I have left. I'm going to try to sue my boss. And again, that's not going to be one. That's going to be a more rare situation. But the whole point is, this is something we've never experienced in our lives. I think we have to do our very best to try to find that middle ground to where we can all walk forward. That's the bottom line.
Go ahead.
I think this effort to protect small business is really critical. And we're very grateful for this effort. We have to remember that small businesses create most of the net new jobs. They also lead us out of the recessions. And if the small business owners aren't there, the job creators aren't there, we're the economy of the entire state's going to be in effect. And those jobs that we're talking about won't be there. So I think that keeping that in mind and looking at, we just got our NFIB has been tracking small business issues for many decades, and our Small Business Economic Trends report just came out this week, and for December, and it shows that the optimism index for small business declined dramatically. I mean, it just tanked. And we're going to find that if small business owners aren't optimistic and ready to start and to grow a business, where's the state going to be?
And that's, I guess, one of the reasons that this was written to be retroactive, again, and forward-looking to 2024, the end of the calendar year. That's another thing that your organization, the trial attorneys, would suggest, which is, let's maybe go 2022. I do know what decade or century it is. 2022 versus 2024. Why does that make a difference to you?
I think one of the things that we reviewed when we were taking a look at Senate Bill 1 was also what's called the PREP Act coming out of the federal government and how they have kind of put sunset time periods on these immunities. And what you don't want, again, we agree that small businesses who are doing the right thing should be protected. I think you're seeing that lawyers do take that all into account, seeing that there's not one single case out there right now against the mom and pop hardware store or something of that nature. So one of the things I think, you know, has been used in other states as well when we reviewed their laws that have gone through. There are similar laws for immunity.
You other states, South Carolina, Ohio, right. Iowa, Utah.
And
all fairly conservative states.
Oklahoma.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And I think one of the things that we noticed was this would be the furthest if it actually did end in December of 24.
In terms of the deadline for sunset, if you want to call it that.
Yes, yeah. Was going to be the longest one that we saw out there. And I think it would be more appropriate to say until the emergency of this pandemic is declared no longer necessary or a certain date. And that is how the PREP Act that came out of the federal government is worded. I think that it's giving kind of a carte blanche immunity to a lot of individuals. And we don't know how this is going to be played out yet. You know, one of the things that I said in my testimony before the committee is this is unique. And we do commend the authors of this bill for coming forward with some proposed solutions on how to protect small businesses and how to protect, you know, people from just running amok and you know, trying to use the legal system to their benefit, which most lawyers are not in favor of. And so one of the things that we want to do is make sure that it's narrowly tailored enough that it's serving the purpose it's intended.
Always a moving target, I suppose. We only have a couple minutes, and this is maybe sounding flippant when I ask this question, but as I want to understand and maybe help viewers and listeners understand the difference between negligence, gross negligence, wanton and willful misconduct. If you work for me, or let's say in deference to you, I'm going to work for you. All right, you're the senator. Or I'm a client of yours. You sneeze on me. Say you do the right thing by sneezing, but still the bug gets over your arm and gets, you haven't engaged in willful misconduct or wanton misconduct. But if you just sneeze at me without a mask, is that, right now, you could sue me or I could sue you, depending on who's the subordinate and who's the boss? I mean, is it as simple and clear cut as that?
I would suppose if you knew you were positive for COVID and you intentionally coughed or sneezed or, I mean, whatever. I mean, I would think that would show disregard for any safety.
So right now, that's an example for people who are laymen.
But obviously, all these terms and definitions have to play themselves out in court in front of a jury.
I was going to offer that. I think that's part of the distinction, because you know there are those out there that are completely disregarding the situation, whether the businesses or employees, and we have seen some of that. So if it's a one-time instance or something like that occurs, and it was just like, you know, sometimes people just don't remember, or it just happens so quickly. But if it's a situation where they are in complete disregard, someone else is going to say, you know, I've seen this over and over and over again. Since the beginning, they have not abided by any of these regulations. I think it's going to be more something like that.
I mean, I would think of an employer, anybody who completely disregards, you know, intentionally, and we added intentional acts. If you intentionally are ignoring proper safety protocols, I would not want this bill to give you any protection.
All right. Well, time goes fast, unfortunately, when we're out of time. I really appreciate the input that all of you have had, and we'll agree not to sneeze on each
other.
Just as a side, as a codicil to this this discussion.
We don't get very much cushion out in the public when we sneeze or cough anymore, I can tell you that.
Look what happened when the governor was seen without his mask back in Brown County last fall. There's a price to pay. Thank you all for being part of this discussion. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator Mark Messmer of Jasper, Democratic Senator David Nizgotsky of South Bend, Barbara Quant of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, and Kathy Fairness of the Indiana Trial Lawyers Association. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, fresh off of his State of the State address, we have our annual discussion with Governor Eric Holcomb. And time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana Lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. Ed, were you surprised how much agreement there seems to be on the immunity bill?
Well, this was a bill that started out with a great concept. Everybody wanted to come to find a sweet spot on it. And I think that they started closer to a sweet spot than with most bills of this kind. But when you see the debate on the floor on this bill and in both the House and the Senate, you're going to hear a lot of individual little kinds of vignettes that will question whether it's really workable, enforceable. And we're just going to have to find a real balancing of the equities in order for this thing to pass with close to unanimous support.
Well, as I mentioned, it did come out of Judiciary Committee with a due pass recommendation this week, but it was hardly the only thing happening at the State House this week. The governor weighed in with put some more meat on the budgetary bones. Your take on that?
Right, yeah, the governor proposed his state budget, and I think a lot of people were surprised. I think the governor even surprised himself. You know, he thought that this was going to be a pretty lean year, and I remember, I'm old enough to remember the Senate Committee on Appropriations Chair Ryan Mishler saying that, you know, if we flatlined education, that would be a win in this budget. And all of a sudden, the governor's coming up with another $377 million in new money for education in his budget. And he's also managed to find a way to pay down about $300 million in bonds that are outstanding. And he believes that we're going to be back at our pre-pandemic surplus level by the end of June of this year.
So does
lot of this was due.
I was just going to say, does the availability of maybe some found money, a bit of a windfall, make it easier to pass a budget or tougher? Because now maybe expectations, which were here, are now up there.
Well, you're still going to have essentially a flatline budget outside of education. You know, there are a few little things that the governor's throwing in, like some more money for the Department of Corrections, and you've got a few different kinds of areas that he's placing a priority on. But yeah, there are going to be some arguments at the margins. You know, he wants to put $50 million to the Fall Creek Pavilion at the State Fairgrounds that got pulled a year or so ago because of lack of financing. And you know, for lack of a better term, this is the swine barn. I think that there are going to be some legislators that are going to want to cast swine before pearl, while some will want to cast pearl.
Had to do that. That's why we love you. Yeah, the words.
Difference in priorities.
The wordsmith always, whether you're here in studio or on the video link. I appreciate that, Ed. As always, Ed Feigenbaum, I appreciate your insight. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and I thank you for joining us. Until next week, take care.